You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Blue Friday show, my co-host Nick Lee. The Seahawks looking to get back into the win column here on Sunday with the winless Jets coming to town to play at Lumen Field. We're going to have our keys to victory on today's episode, plus a report card for Seattle's rookie class. We're now three quarters of the way into the season. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's interesting, Nick. The Seahawks drop their Week 13 game to the Giants, 17-12, one of the uglier performances of the Pete Carroll era. And after the game, coaches and players alike, they were saying they were prepared for this game. They were indicating that they didn't downplay their opponent. The Giants came in with a 4-7 record, but the general consensus was that the effort and preparation had nothing to do with the performance on the field. And here we get to Thursday, and Shaquille Griffin, who's always been very candid, he's open with the media. He will say whatever comes to his mind, and he's always honest with reporters for the most part. He comes out and says that he thinks the Seahawks kind of eased up off the gas a little bit and that they took the Giants lightly. And he said, that's just being totally honest. And in this league, you can lose to anybody. It really is that any given Sunday idea that any NFL team can win against any other team. And the Seahawks, apparently, at least in Griffin's case, maybe overlooked this Giants squad a little bit going into last week's game.
Yeah, I mean, this leaves me scratching my head, honestly. He said that we came in Monday and we spoke about the game and the mistakes that were made and tried to correct it and continued that. But understand that this team was not supposed to beat us. That's just being totally honest. And they were not supposed to win that game, and we have to live with that. And they were not. I understand. What I'm trying to understand is how this happened, because they didn't take the Giants seriously. I mean, I get the Jets. I understand that. But the Giants are hotter than the Seahawks. They won four of their last six entering the game against the Seahawks again. And the Seahawks record, they're 3-3. So worse than the Giants in the last six games. They're a division leader. I know that's the NFC least, but they're still you took a division leader lightly. That is inexcusable. I get the backup quarterback part of it too, but yeah. The 32nd ranked pass defense can't afford to take Portland State lightly, much less the Giants. And the offense didn't do anything either. And it's absolutely inexcusable. And I think that's on the coaches and also on the leaders of this team. And this, Corbin, this kind of begs the question for me. Does this team have the right leadership in the locker room? I know they have the coaching staff and the player pedigree, but do they have the right leadership amongst the players to get to a Super Bowl? Because this suggests that they don't. And this one could come back to bite them big time in the division. Now they're not in first place in the division. It absolutely probably cost them for good, the number one overall seed in the NFC. You're going to look back and go, shoot, had we beaten the Giants, we could be hosting a playoff game right now instead of playing the Rams or in Green Bay in freezing Lambeau weather in January.
Yeah, this is certainly going to be a loss that a few weeks from now, the Seahawks could be looking at with great regret, because let's assume the Seahawks win out here. Let's say they win their last four games. They get to 12-4. That's likely going to be a number two seed at best. And with the new format, that is no longer a bye week. Only one team in each conference gets the bye. And so not only did you put your chances of winning the division, you know, you put it in a tougher spot, you also made it much tougher for yourselves to be able to get a higher seed in the conference. The New Orleans Saints now have two full games up on the Seahawks. The Green Bay Packers have a better record. So Seattle's in a really tough spot, even if they end up with the same record as New Orleans, based on the research that I have done. And obviously there's some variables here that have to be accounted for each week that may change this. But based on the research that I've done, it looks like the Saints and tiebreakers would dominate those tiebreakers. So they would be the team that gets the top seed no matter what. And that's not even accounting for the Packers being in there as well. And so for the Seahawks to lay an egg in this particular game, I'm with you. I don't understand at all how they could have gone into this game thinking, well, let's take this team lightly. Yes, they had a backup quarterback, but the Giants had won three consecutive games. Their defense had been balling. So it really speaks volumes. You mentioned the leadership aspect. I've got to wonder. I think it goes down to the coaching staff too, because Pete Carroll always talks about every week is a championship opportunity. These comments from Shaquille Griffin suggest that the seasoned veterans, maybe some of them on this team, aren't necessarily buying into that philosophy. At least they didn't last week. He did make it clear that that's something that they looked at the elephant in the room. They took care of it this week, and that they're back refocused looking at this next week as a championship opportunity. And that's absolutely how they have to approach it. The Jets, as you mentioned, this is the team if you were going to overlook. They're 0-12. They have not won a game yet this year. But when you're coming off a big loss like that one last weekend to the other New York team, then you absolutely cannot afford to have another little slip up this week. If they somehow lost to the Jets, if they lose this game on Sunday, then we need to start talking about this team not only missing out on winning the division, but missing the playoffs. And so they absolutely needed a wake-up call. We can kind of look at it from a positive in that regard, that that's really what this was. If they were not ready to play, as Griffin was indicating, and not, they were not taking the Giants seriously, they absolutely deserved to lose that game. And if they have to play a playoff game in Green Bay because of it, again, they will look back at this game with regret.
Yeah, and I hope we take a positive spin from this and say, look, this is the New York Jets, but the New York Jets were a stupid defensive play call away from beating the Raiders last weekend. And they're, and statistically speaking, it's pretty, I think I read somewhere, it's almost as hard to go 0-16 as it is 16-0 statistically. So eventually stats would suggest, law of averages would suggest that the Jets would win a game before the end of the year. So you don't want to be that one in the win column for the Jets. And so hopefully this was a wake-up call. This was okay. Now that the Giants got us, the Jets can't get us too. Because, yeah, if you lose to the Jets at home when they were 0-12, you have no business in the playoffs. None. You have no right to talk about what playoffs. You have nothing coming to you.
And I think this is a situation, and I wrote this in my article today after I heard these comments from Griffin. This is a situation where if you truly want to show you've learned from this, don't just go out and beat the Jets. This Seahawks team has not shown they can put anybody away
this
year.
Destroy them.
Go out and obliterate this football team that you are supposed to beat. Don't take them lightly. Don't take your foot off the pedal. Jets fans will thank you. Maybe that means Adam Gase gets fired after this week. I mean, seriously, they would be ecstatic if Adam Gase is no longer on the sideline. You've got some former Jets on your team that want to really dish the punishment to their former team. So go do it. That would be my other positive spin out of this. Maybe the Seahawks look back at this last game like, man, we shouldn't have lost that game. And they're going to come out angry, and they're really going to dish it out to the Jets in response. That would be what, as a fan, I would be hoping that I get to see on Sunday when the Jets play the Seahawks. When we return for the second quarter, as we do each Blue Friday episode, we're going to devise a game plan for a Seahawks victory. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to Locked On Seahawks, our Blue Friday episode. I'm Corbin Smith along with Nick Lee. Coming up on Monday, as always, we'll be looking back at what transpired this weekend as the Seahawks play the Jets in Week 14. Plenty of analysis regardless of the outcome. Hopefully this week it will be a victory Monday, as it should be. Let's talk about this upcoming matchup and let's look at the game plan. We do this every Friday, Nick. We come up with offensive and defensive strategies to beat the upcoming opponent. Last weekend, I would say for the most part that the Seahawks failed our game plan, did not execute the way that they needed to, and there was too much focus on the downfield passing game against this particular team, the other New York squad, the Jets. Let's start with the Seahawks on defense, because this would seem like a game plan that really should be foolproof. The Jets are 32nd in yards per play. They're 31st in passing offense. They are 19th in rushing offense, which isn't anything special, but on this team, that's incredible. Everything, and they're basically 31st and 32nd in every meaningful offensive category. Their best offensive skill player is Frank Gore, who is 37 years old, and there's a chance he might not even be able to play in this game because he got concussed last weekend. I mean, this team is banged up. They already had a dearth of talent on the offensive side of the football. Their quarterback is struggling. This just seems like it's one of those games the Seahawks just got to go out and play their game, don't make mistakes, and you should be able to stop this offense pretty much every time they have the ball, you would think.
Yeah, you play an average game, and the Seahawks should have just as good of a game as they did against the Giants. And, you know, less than 20 points, I think, would be an optimal result here. They basically are the first 7 weeks of the season Seahawks defense version of an offense. I mean, they're just 32nd in just about everything. The ones that stuck out to me, Corbin, are they're 32nd in red zone efficiency and 32nd in points per drive. There's just no punch, no explosiveness. Nothing on this offense makes you worried. Yeah, 76-year-old Frank Gore, whatever, however it is, he's been there. They have an ancient running back, an ancient relic, as their top explosive playmaker. I mean that's a credit to him. He's a Hall of Famer walking, but that's got to say a little bit about what's going on the offensive side of the ball. And I think there's several members of the Jets staff that are fired people walking, and Sam Darnold is pretty bad. I will say though, that he did have his best rated game of the season against the Raiders last week. I believe it was 97.4 or 94.7, one of those two. So he is coming off of his best rated game of the season. So he might be a little bit more confident heading into this game. And so you do got to respect it. This is, I think we've learned last week, you still got to respect your opponent and you got to get the job done. And the Seahawks defense is getting right. So this isn't really a get right game. This is a stay right game. This is a game where you continue on that trajectory of improving. The pass rush is present there. The pass defense is improving. And I know that people are thinking this all over the place, but let Jamal Adams loose, because you don't think he wants a piece of the Jets. So let's let a hungry dog eat there.
Yeah, I think Jamal Adams is going to be a player that's going to be a focal point of this game coming off the edge, not just because he's playing his former team, but because this is a team that's 25th in sacks allowed. And Sam Darnold is one of those quarterbacks. He can move the pocket a little bit. He's not a great athlete. If you can put pressure on him, he is going to force bad throws. He has 5 touchdowns compared to 9 interceptions this year. He has regressed in that area of his game. And so if you can get some pressure on him, I don't necessarily condone blitzing all the time. That's not necessarily what I'm arguing for, but certainly this is a team that isn't great at any one thing on offense. Really, they're not good at any one thing on offense or even serviceable. I guess you could say the run game's been serviceable being 19th, but otherwise they've been unable to do anything offensively. The one thing I will say, they have put up 27 or more points in, I believe, 3 of their last 5 games. And so they have been doing better offensively. You mentioned Darnold having his highest passer rating against the Raiders last week. So maybe there's a little bit more confidence there than what there was early in the season, where this team was completely punchless on offense. But still, the Seahawks should be able to get pressure with their front four. Jamal Adams is going to cause problems for both the tackles, George Fant, and Mekhi Becton is a really good first-round tackle that they have at left tackle. But he's a player that's given up a few sacks in recent weeks. He's still a rookie. I feel like the Seahawks can take advantage of that. And even the interior offensive line for the Jets isn't anything spectacular. So the interior guys should be able to get some pressure, Puna Ford and Jaron Reed and company. So I absolutely think they should have no issues getting the heat on Sam Darnold. And I think you can turn this into a game where you were able to create 2 or 3 turnovers. Last week, Colt McCoy was pretty careful with the football. The only interception he threw, it went through the receiver's hands, Evan Engram, and then it was picked off by Quandre Diggs. This is a different quarterback situation. Sam Darnold is going to take those chances, partially because he absolutely has to. This offense doesn't have any other way to move the ball. So you are going to have your chances to create turnovers. Can they capitalize? I think it's going to be even easier without Denzel Mims being out there, who is away for a family emergency and now, due to COVID protocols, won't be able to play in this game. So you took away one of their best outside threats at receiver. There is no excuse that the Seahawks can't get pressure on Darnold, shouldn't have issues slowing down the run game either, especially if Gore's not out there. Again, you don't want to sleep on anyone, but this offense has been flat-out terrible in every capacity. The way the Seahawks have been playing as of late on defense, this should be another game where they aren't just keeping things rolling. They take their next step forward towards hitting the playoffs in stride.
Yeah, the last two games, the Jets have had five giveaways and six sacks allowed. So there will be some opportunities to disrupt and force some turnovers. You got to limit the pass. You should sack Sam Darnold. This isn't that difficult. This isn't brain surgery. Force him to make bad decisions and get that inept offense behind the chains, and you should win the ballgame.
The Seahawks are coming off that pitiful performance with 12 points against the Giants. New York, the Giants, they were playing really good defensive football coming into this game. They had a great game plan. The Jets on defense without Jamal Adams, obviously getting traded to the Seahawks. You look at the numbers this year. They have been good against the run. Fourth in yards per carry allowed. A lot of that has to do with Quinnen Williams, the inside. He is a monster. He's been playing outstanding football as of late. I think the Seahawks are going to have to consider using some double teams on him because the rest of their defensive line isn't anything spectacular. They don't have a featured edge rusher that you really need to worry about, but Quinnen Williams is a game wrecker in the middle. That's one of the reasons they've been so good in terms of yards per carry, but you look at the rest of their numbers. They're 21st in yards per play allowed, 31st in passing defense. They've got two rookies starting at corner, players that I really liked in the draft process in Bryce Hall, as well as Lamar Jackson. But those guys are young guys that haven't played very many snaps in the NFL. They haven't been able to generate pressure. They're 24th in pressure rate, 25th in sacks. It's so weird saying this because we just saw the Seahawks struggle to get that downfield passing game going. But I don't think the Jets, they're going to have a new coordinator in there in Frank Bush. I don't think they're going to be near as prepared for this game. And I don't think they have near the playmakers the Giants do. So there is no excuse. The Seahawks should be able to get that vertical passing game going. And I think you could see them hit on four or five plays at least that are 30 plus yards in this game. I think the opportunities will be there given the secondary injuries and the lack of pass rush for the Jets.
Yeah, Quinnen Williams will definitely be a problem, like you mentioned. I think that the Seahawks can afford to give him maybe the Aaron Donald treatments because you're not really scared about what else is going on. So, yeah, chip him, double team him, make sure he becomes a non-factor, because if Quinnen Williams isn't a factor, that defense won't be much of a factor. And honestly, this could be – I know that we're going to roll some eyes and we've kind of learned otherwise the last couple of weeks, but this could be a little bit of a Russ Cook kind of game just because of that decent run defense. Their pass defense is pretty bad. Like you mentioned, some inexperience in the secondary. Take advantage of that. This is a game where you can look for those deep shots because, like you said, they don't have a Jabril Peppers. They don't have the secondary that the Giants do. They don't have those playmakers that can make you think twice about it. But also, I think that we learned this is a cautionary tale. You can't let the Giants beat you twice in the sense that they need to learn from what happened against the Giants and not be too stubborn. And when things aren't working, to make adjustments and take what they give you, because the Seahawks were not taking what the Giants were giving him, and the Giants were giving him a decent amount. They just weren't taking it. And you know, this defense is bad. So that bad enough to where they're going to misstep. They're going to make mistakes. Just bide your time and the opportunities will be there.
And I still think the fourth in yards per carry allowed is a little bit misleading because it's kind of like the Seahawks defense. I think a lot of teams have come in and said, you know what? This secondary can't defend anyone. We're going to sling the ball over the place. And Seattle may do that in this football game. As I said, with the injury situation on the outside, it would make sense. You can feature DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and Russell Wilson should be able to get the ball downfield in this game. Even if the Jets borrow some of the schematic stuff that the Giants were doing so well last week, again, they don't have the horses to be able to run it near as well as what the Giants did a week ago. And so I think those opportunities will be there. The Jets have a lot of injuries at linebacker too. So I still think this is a team. Again, Quinnen Williams can be that single game wrecker in the middle, but I still think that you can get Chris Carson rolling in this game too. Open up the play action passing game. It's all about adjustments. We'll see what the Jets end up doing with Frank Bush in his first game as a coordinator since 2010. Maybe he'll throw some new wrinkles in there. Not a lot of time to be able to do that though, with Greg Williams being fired on Monday. So again, this is a defense that you look front to back. There's a couple playmakers, Quinnen Williams being the most notable, but they have a lot of holes on this defense. And as long as the Seahawks come in and they execute, particularly in the passing game, this should be a get-right game for Russell Wilson and company. I think that you mentioned the let Russ cook thing. Certainly you want to run the ball some, but I think this defense, it's catered more to let's torch them through the air, and I think they'll be able to do that.
I absolutely do. I think that there will be opportunities there, and this defense is – the Seahawks should just be able to out-talent, and they better out-effort this team after last week. And this is a game. I know this is like the definition of insanity to assume this is going to happen over and over again and get burned over and over again. This could be finally a game where the Seahawks gasp, win a game by more than 7 points.
Like I said in the first quarter, if you want to put last week behind you, the whole taking the Giants lightly, then go out and don't just take the Jets seriously. Treat this like a Super Bowl. That's what Pete Carroll's philosophy is. Every week's a championship. Go out and play like it. This is a team that you should be able to obliterate. They are not good at really anything. The only strength they have is with Quinnen Williams being a factor up front. They've got a couple guys in offense that are young players that are intriguing. But this is a team that should not be able to move the football consistently against you on offense, and they should not be able to slow down your offense, both passing and running the ball. I'm sorry, but watching the film, looking at the numbers, this is a game you go out, you take care of business. Maybe you can mix in some of your young players in the second half. It'd be nice to see a game like that. Maybe even get Geno Smith out there in a revenge game against his former team. I mean, it'd be nice to see Seattle throw several punches in the first half and really just put the Jets away and then let some backups play. They have not been able to do that in a long time. And so this game is ripe for that if the Seahawks actually go out and get it done. I guess we'll see on Sunday. When we return in the third quarter, we are now three quarters of the way through the 2020 season. It's still hard to believe that I'm saying that. We're going to bust out our latest rookie report card for all of Seattle's draft picks when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me, my co-host, Nick Lee. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every day with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It's time for our latest rookie report card. We did this at the quarter mark. We did it halfway through the season. We are now three quarters of the way, 12 games down, just four games left to play during this COVID-19 season. I still can't believe that we're this deep into the year, and knock on wood, there's been a few close calls, but they've been able to get in every game to this point. Let's talk Seahawks 2020 draft picks. And certainly there have been a few disappointments as we'll get down the line here, but we have to start with our first round pick, number 27 overall, Jordan Brooks. It was one of the most scrutinized, criticized selections in the first round of the draft because Seattle was stacked at linebacker, and yet John Schneider decided to pull the trigger and bring in Brooks. And early in the year, he was really struggling, and then he had a knee injury that cost him a few games. But I think it's safe to say, when you look at the way he played on Sunday against the Giants, a career-high 11 tackles, nearly had his first interception as well, he is playing much better football of late, and he really has a chance here, these final four regular season games into the playoffs, to really be an impact contributor for this surging defense.
Yeah, he's definitely picked it up recently, and just about half of his total tackles coming in the last three games. He's getting his feet under him. You can tell he's just getting more comfortable. He was everywhere in that Giants game, and he played like a first-round linebacker should look in that game. And he hasn't done that all year, obviously. But as he's getting more comfortable in the scheme and just getting his sea legs in the NFL, he's looking like a viable replacement for one day KJ Wright. And I think that's what they envisioned, and maybe even Bobby Wagner down the line sometime. So I'm giving him a grade-wise. I'm grading him heavily on a curve because given the fact that the Seahawks seem to reach for him in the first round, like you mentioned, he needs to do a lot in order to validate a first-round selection. Fun fact, his Pro Football Focus grade is 43.9, which still isn't great, but it's getting better. You know, as a 28.4 grade, Patrick Queen, the one everyone was whining about that Seattle passed on for Brooks. So I'm going to give him a solid B because of the progress he's showing. He's really coming into his own last couple weeks, and I'm excited for the last four games, especially for him.
Yeah, this has to be weighted based on when he's had reps, and most of his reps have been in the last three or four games, and there have certainly been some rookie mistakes. I'm going to give him a B- for that reason. The missed tackle, the goal line the other day was really the only bad play that he had, though. So he's trimming down on those rookie mistakes, and really he's an aggressive player. You can see the speed on the field, and he's been much better in coverage than Patrick Queen. That's been one of the biggest differences between those two. But it's funny, Queen had a fumble return for a touchdown early in the year, and Seahawk fans were just panicking, like, why didn't we draft this guy? But if you look since then, he's missed like a million tackles.
He's been
Jordan
bad.
Brooks has missed four the entire season. He is a tackling machine, and he's just going to keep getting better. They are fired up about this kid, and so I really like the way that he's playing out there. He's got a chance, again, to really solidify his standing as one of the best young linebackers in football the next few weeks. They're playing him more snaps now because they have to. He's earned them. Second-round pick, Daryl Taylor, we don't have a grade that we can really give him. I mean, it's going to be an F if you're really thinking about how bummed everybody is that he has not got on the field yet, but just had an injection in his surgically repaired leg. That's not the bombshell that reporters and fans were hoping to hear from Pete Carroll earlier this week. It's still not practiced once for the Seahawks. We are getting to the end of the regular season. My opinion, it is time to shut it down. I think you have to look forward to 2021. Just get this kid healthy for next season. You traded for Carlos Dunlap. Alton Robinson, we'll talk about in a bit, has been a solid contributor. I just don't feel like it's the right situation where they absolutely have to rush him back onto the field. Just get him healthy with all sights on next season.
Yeah, I'm really bummed about this guy. I was high on him in the spring, even before Seattle took him. I wrote about how the Seahawks might want to take a look at him. I just liked his tools, and I still do, for sure. Unfortunately, he hasn't even practiced in a Seahawks uniform, like you said. So Pete Carroll just said it might be a couple more weeks, and yeah, let's you know what happens in a couple more weeks? The season ends, basically. Seattle, the thing I'm bummed about is Seattle once again took a high pick on a guy that can't keep healthy. I know part of that isn't really their fault. He was not damaged goods. That's not the right word. That's not really fair. But he came into to the Seahawks, to the VMAC, banged up from Tennessee. And then, of course, the Seahawks have struggled with higher picks the last few years. Malik McDowell, Rashad Penny, now Taylor. So unfortunately, it's an F for now, or maybe it's an NA. I don't know, but it's certainly not great.
No, it stinks. It absolutely stinks because I think he's a player, if he was healthy, that could have really come in and helped this team early in the year. On the flip side, they might not have gone out and got Carlos Dunlap, though, if he was healthy. I mean, and if he was playing well, they wouldn't have needed to. So it's kind of one of those hypothetical things. We really don't know how things would have played out, but I just don't see any need to bring him back. Pete Carroll continues to be optimistic. I just don't see any way he plays this year. And if he does get activated the last couple games, he hasn't practiced. So I don't know how he's going to go out and make any impact. Now, the player that has made an impact all season long, he was a starter on day one, third round pick, Damian Lewis. He started in all 12 games. Pro Football Focus, he's got a 76.1 grade, which is really good for a rookie starting for the first time in the NFL. He's had his share of issues time to time. He's been more consistent in the run game, which is exactly what I expected coming out of LSU. That was his biggest strength. He is a mauler. He is a road grader. He's been better than I expected overall, though, in pass pro. Really, his biggest issue has been penalties, and even those have gone down in recent weeks. And the fact that he started a game at center when he had never played a game at that position, and the Seahawks were able to win the game. He made his share of mistakes, but I have to give him an A. I don't see how you could give him any worse of a grade when you consider the whole center thing and the fact he started every game and he's exceeded expectations in pass pro. He's been great as a run blocker. I don't see how you can give him a lower grade than that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a revelation. Clearly, he's the cream of the crop, or I guess for seasonal purposes, the marshmallow on top of the hot cocoa this year for the draft class is Damian Lewis. He started every game, like you mentioned, 76.1 grade, which is great. The dude started a game at center on like 2 days' notice and did better than Joey Hunt ever did. I mean, he's done what he's been asked to do. He's smart. He's one of the best offensive linemen in the entire class. And I contend he's having a Pro Bowl season as a rookie. And so, yeah, absolutely an A.
Yeah, I think you could make the argument that he deserves to play in the Pro Bowl. Not that they're playing it this year, but to at least earn a roster spot.
Controller.
On Madden, yeah, they're going to be doing it on Madden. It'd be nice to see 68 out there in the lineup and him and Nick Ballore being first-time Pro Bowlers potentially. But we'll just have to see if that happens. But I think he's certainly deserving. The Seahawks had a pair of fourth-round picks back in April. Colby Parkinson, the tight end out of Stanford, as well as DJ Dallas, the running back out of Miami. We haven't gotten to see much out of Parkinson. He was on the non-football injury list recovering from foot surgery for the first half of the season. And since then, now with Greg Olsen out, he's actually played a few offensive snaps, but still no stats. Russell Wilson has not thrown any passes to the 6'7", 250-pound target. He hasn't had any opportunities yet. Maybe that time will be coming. Right now, I'm just going to give him a C-, just because what have we really had to evaluate on? He's made a couple decent blocks, but he's basically played like 2% of the plays this year. We haven't really had anything to see. It's tough to come up with any type of a grade for him based on his workload he's had so far.
Yeah, kind of feeling the same way as Taylor, you know, NA. But, you know, 16 offensive snaps in 3 games, 15 on special teams, no catches or tackles. Not much to say yet. He might have a bigger opportunity coming in the next month, and I think we might revisit this in a month or so and say, hey, you know, he really came on in those last 4 games, and especially hopefully with the offense getting right, then there will be more opportunities to catch the football, and maybe he'll sneak in there and get a couple good catches. So right now, like a D or an NA, if I have to give him a grade D, but I'd prefer to give him an NA.
Yeah, I can't justify giving him a D because he just hasn't had any opportunities, and that's not really his fault. He was injured, and he hasn't played much since. But DJ Dallas, on the other hand, has gotten a couple of starts this season when Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde were banged up. 30 rushes for 101 yards, 3.4 yards per carry. That's not too great, but he had a couple of touchdowns on the ground. He had a touchdown as a receiver, and this is where he's really impressed. This shouldn't surprise. He was a receiver when he first got to Miami, and then they moved him to running back, but 17 receptions for 111 yards. He's been up and down in pass protection. He's been better as of late. He had a rough game the first game against Arizona. Seemed to rebound from that and learn from that tough outing there. But I think there's a lot to like about DJ Dallas. I don't know if he ever has feature back potential, but certainly this guy has shown glimpses that he could be a really good third down back, complimenting if Chris Carson's back next year or if Rashad Penny is the guy next season out of the backfield. There looks to be a role for this kid moving forward. So I'm going to give him a solid C-plus for his efforts this year.
Oh, we didn't share grades beforehand, and I also gave him a C-plus. You know, passing. And then a little bit better than passing. He became the main back by necessity against the 49ers and the Bills. And his rushing, like you mentioned, the yards per carry number, his yards per carry was actually 2.3 in 18 carries against the Niners, which is woof. But with Hyde and Carson mostly healthy now, he's been back to more of a special teams, change of pace kind of guy. He's done everything that they've asked of him, started 2 games as a rookie when really no one thought he would. And like you said, he's been getting better with pass protection, and I think he could be a weapon in the pass game eventually. Maybe that guy that they always hope that CJ Prosize could be. He's shown that skill set for sure. So yeah, solid C-plus for me. He's shown some good things, obviously some big things to work on, but yeah, in a good direction.
Yeah, he's been one of their more exciting rookies this season. In the fifth round, they drafted Alton Robinson out of Syracuse, and overall the stats, not anything spectacular, but 14 tackles, 4 tackles for a loss, and a pair of sacks. There have been flashes from Alton Robinson, and what I've really noticed, for the most part, he's been pretty stout against the run. The 49ers game might have been the best game he's had. He had a sack in that game, and the 49ers run game is so difficult to prepare for because they block really well and they use a lot of motion, and that creates extra gaps, and it can just be really difficult for edge defenders. And yet Allen Robinson had a really good game. He's had a couple other games where he's completely been non-existent, and that's not abnormal for a fifth round pick that's a rookie that's trying to get his feet wet a bit in the NFL. So I've been encouraged by what I've seen from Allen Robinson. I'd like to see more consistency from him, particularly in the pass rushing department, but I'm going to give him a B because I think for a fifth round pick, especially considering Daryl Taylor hasn't played any snaps this year, for him to come up the way that he has as a rotational player and be able to contribute as much as he has, that means something. This is a really sound day three selection for the Seahawks.
Yeah, a lot of this grade is on a curve based on the fact that he's a fifth round pick, where the bar is not as lofty as it, say, is for Daryl Taylor or another pass rusher that's taken in the first couple days. Certainly early in the year, the Seahawks were still searching for answers with the pass rush. He played 70% of the snaps and got a sack against the 49ers. Got a sack in his first NFL debut against the Cowboys. However, he's virtually disappeared since the Rams game. A lot of that has to do with the arrival of Carlos Dunlap and how all of the other players like LJ Collier have been. It's like you mentioned, the guys get film on him. It's a really steep curve with the fifth round pick. So I'm going to give him a solid B minus. He's been a good player, and I think that there's some good things moving forward that the Seahawks can take from the production he's gotten, especially as a fifth round pick, because sometimes fifth round picks don't even see the football field. So it's been nice to get at least a little production.
Yeah, and it's even more uncommon for sixth rounders to get significant snaps early, and yet Freddie Swain has done that. He's played a lot of snaps for the Seahawks this year. Now, most of his stats came in the first half of the season. He did have a couple big targets on Sunday, unfortunately was not able to reel in. The one catch that he did have was wiped out by a penalty, but so far this year, 10 receptions, 134 yards, and a touchdown, 8.4 yards per target. I think for a sixth-round pick, though, these are pretty solid numbers. And the other thing I've been encouraged by as of late, I've actually been arguing for DJ Reed to be the kick returner, but he's had to start a couple games on the outside, so the Seahawks have kind of been hesitant to do that. But Freddie Swain has also looked good in the few opportunities he's had to return kicks. And that was something he was very good at during his time at Florida. So I'm going to give him a B minus just because there have been a few games where he's been absolutely a non-factor. And I was getting a little bit too high of expectations with the way that he played the first three or four games. But there have been glimpses that this guy coming out of the slot can be a consistent contributor for this offense. And I think as he continues to gain experience, that he is going to be a guy that Russell Wilson is going to become more and more comfortable with on the outside.
Yeah, I like what you mentioned about the special teams. He's returned four kicks for 83 yards, and there is some interest there for sure. For a while, the first, I don't know, 5-6 weeks of the season, I thought we had the next four receiver in the rotation on our hands. He had at least one catch in the first five games to open the season and his NFL career, and he's had just three catches in seven games since, and all three of them came against the Rams. So essentially, he's been held catchless in six of his last seven games. Granted, like you mentioned, sixth-round pick. And when you got guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett catching the ball, you don't need to ride or die with a sixth-round wide receiver. So he's fallen off a bit as kind of like Allen Robinson on defense. He had a good start, some good things to a positive momentum to get to learn from and take into year two. But once they got film on him, it's a steep learning curve. And I think that Freddie Swain is a guy that has surprised me. I watched him at Florida. I lived in Gainesville, so I like to watch those games. And he was a guy that stuck out to me as a guy that he can just make some plays, and he's got the speed. He's got a good eye for an open field. And I think he's got the potential to still be maybe a 3-4 kind of receiver next year.
The last draft pick the Seahawks made, second straight year, they traded back in the seventh round to make one more selection. This year, it was to draft Stephen Sullivan, who was drafted as a tight end. And then Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. decided early in the season, let's move him to defensive end. And why not? 6'5", 245 pounds, a really good athlete with long arms. He played it in high school. Let's see if he can do it. And he actually got called up for the San Francisco game as a defensive end and made a tackle on the game's opening drive. And so for that reason, I'm disappointed we didn't get to see more of him out there. Obviously, he was extremely raw at defensive end. They were not going to be just calling him up to the 53-man roster and having him play every single game. That would have been a disaster because he's just not ready for that. But He's a guy I still think could be a tight end for this team down the road. It sounds like that's what the Seahawks are planning to do when he comes back from injury. He unfortunately had to have surgery that ended his season here. We won't see him again the rest of the year, but I'm going to give him a B minus just because I think he's a guy that tantalized a little bit in camp. You can see the tools really didn't get many opportunities, but the one game that he did play, having never played defensive end at college, I think he's warranted receiving at least a B minus because he made a tackle in an NFL game as a defensive end. How cool is that?
I'm actually going to go a bit farther. I think he deserves a B plus. Just because for the willingness to switch it up, the being willing to, you know, wherever you want me, coach, I love those attitudes. And as a former coach myself, you know, you can find a place for those guys who have the athletic traits, that you mentioned. And also the guys that just want to be on the football field and play football. And it's fun to coach guys like that. So yeah, B plus for me, played 22 snaps against the Niners with that tackle. And I think whether it's at tight end or at defensive end, I think we have not seen the last of Stephen Sullivan.
Yeah, he's a player that I'm going to be really excited. Hopefully we're going to have normal OTAs and stuff this year to get a glimpse of how he's developing going into year two. I know he's a player that the organization, Pete Carroll and company, they're very excited to get him back out there in the spring and be able to work with him. Again, it sounds like it's going to be tight end, but a player like this, you never know. Ken Norton Jr. might nudge him with an elbow again and say, hey, Pete, can I have him again? And they might make a switch there. There was apparently some fighting over Sullivan, and why not? His size, his athleticism, that's a rare player in the NFL. And when you get a chance to mold a ball of clay, that's a lot of fun for coaches. So no question, he's a guy that is on their radar to be a much bigger contributor next season. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at NickLee51. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we return on Monday, Rob Rang will be rejoining me, and we will break down the results of Sunday's game between the Seahawks and the Jets, and of course, review the playoff picture with three games left to play. Enjoy your weekend and enjoy the game. Go Hawks.